This is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox. It's time now for our weekly Africa update. The top news today is the inauguration of Nigeria's new president. It marks the first peaceful handover of power from one elected leader to another in the country's 47-year history since independence. President Bush announces that Washington is imposing fresh sanctions on targeted individuals and companies in Sudan linked to the violence in Darfur. And the International Criminal Court in The Hague is investigating alleged crimes, including sexual violence, committed in the Central African Republic. Let's catch up on all these stories now with NPR's Africa correspondent, Ofebia Quist-Arkton, who is back at base in the Senegalese capital, Dakar. Ofebia, how are you?
Greetings from Dakar.
Well, the new president of Nigeria has been officially sworn in. Principle, this marks the landmark first transfer of power from one civilian leader to another in Africa's most populous nation. But there are questions over the democratic legitimacy of the new leader. We'll talk about that in a moment. But first, let's hear how he took the oath of office.
That I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to the Federal Republic of Nigeria.
Ofebia, maybe we should begin with this. Let's get the correct pronunciation of the name of Nigeria's new president, because it doesn't sound like it looks, does it?
Are you ready?
Yes.
Umaru Musa, that bit's easy. Umaru Musa, and then the last name, Eradua. Now, it's spelt with a Y, Y-A-R apostrophe capital A-D-U-A, but it's pronounced almost without the Y. You swallow it. So Umaru Musa Eradua. Got it?
Got it. But what we don't have, and what a lot of people perhaps don't understand, Ofebia, and I'd like for you to explain, is why his four-year presidency started off on such a sour note.
That was because of disputed presidential elections last month in Nigeria. And there were allegations of massive vote rigging, not only by ordinary voters, Nigerians, but also by local and international observer groups. They said that there was ballot stuffing. There were ballots that had been thumbprinted even before they got to the polling centres, and all sorts of vote rigging, vote fraud. And apparently not only on the government side, but also on the side of opposition parties. But it's the opposition that is challenging the presidential results, and the opposition that is saying Umaru Musa Eradua was not democratically elected, that it was a selection and not an election.
Now, Nigeria is a regional giant. It's home to Africa's largest population, 140 million people. It's also the continent's number one oil exporter. In fact, people here in the States, when we fill up at the gas station next time, that oil could be Nigerian fuel. So Nigeria supplies the U.S. with a fifth of all of its crude oil imports. What are the major challenges facing the new government?
Now, although Nigeria actually pumps this Bonny crude, Bonny light, and apparently it is very good because it's easy to refine, ordinary Nigerians have problems themselves getting gas at the gas station. I mean, there has been a fuel price hike and there's been a strike. All sorts of things are facing this new government. Perhaps, though, the trickiest thing that Umaru Musa Eradua has to deal with is turbulence in the Niger Delta. Now, this is the oil-producing region of Nigeria, and for almost the past year and a half, militants have been active with a sabotage campaign of Nigeria's oil industry, and it says it's going to force out foreign oil companies because it and the government are, as they say, robbing the region of their oil wealth. Although the crude oil is being pumped in their backyards, they feel that local people are not benefiting, that there's unemployment, underdevelopment, poverty, and yet look at the billions of oil dollars that Nigeria is making. So those are the sorts of problems that the new president faces. And then also basic things like Nigeria, although it has all these oil and gas reserves, has chronic power shortages, no proper working, reliable electricity supply, not enough running water, and no running water in many areas, apart from unemployment and things like political thuggery. I mean, for most of its 47 years, Nigeria has been under military rule. This was meant to be a new era, but many Nigerians say, we're fed up. Look, we went out to vote, and look how this country is being governed or misgoverned.
Let's turn our attention to the Sudan, where Big developments are taking place. President Bush has announced that the U.S. will impose tough new sanctions against Sudan to punish those who are deemed to be fueling continuing violence in the Darfur region. Why has Washington, Ophelia, taken that action now?
I think Washington is tired of waiting. The U.S. feels that it has given President Omar Hassan al-Bashir, the leader of Sudan, long enough to come round. They feel that he is stalling, that he is probably one of the main obstacles to peace and the end to violence in Darfur. And I'll tell you why the main reason is. The U.S. is one of those that really backs U.N. peacekeepers being sent to Darfur. And up till now, Sudan has resisted. But the 7,000 African Union peacekeepers who are currently trying to keep the peace or trying to at least stop the fighting are totally overwhelmed. They're under-resourced, they don't have big enough numbers, and they're not able to do the job. They're not able to protect locals, civilians. They're not able to protect the humanitarian workers. And people say the Sudanese government, and Washington is saying that the Sudanese government is really an obstacle to peace. Listen to what President Bush had to say about these sanctions or proposed sanctions.
The dire security situation on the ground in Darfur has not changed. So today, at my instruction, the United States is taking the steps I announced in April. We're targeting sanctions against individuals responsible for violence. These sanctions will isolate these persons by cutting them off from the U.S. financial system, barring them from doing business with any American citizen or company, and calling the world's attention to their crimes.
Ophelia, while all of this is taking place, across Darfur's border to the south sits the Central African Republic, and indeed the Darfur conflict has spilled into neighboring CAR and Chad as well. Now, the CAR is not a country that gets much media coverage here in the United States. Why is it in the news now?
Well, apart from the spillover from Darfur, and of course, 200,000 people have been killed in the Darfur conflict, and it has spilled over, as we've said, into Chad and the Central African Republic. Now the International Criminal Court, which was established to try people suspected of war crimes and genocide, and it's doing just that in Darfur, it says it's going to look at alleged crimes committed in the Central African Republic itself. Now, the ICC was established, 5 years ago? And it says it wants to investigate especially widespread reports of sexual violence in the CAR. Now, this dates back to the civil war in the country, and that pitted Central African rebels against the government. It was another of those bitter African conflicts, but not one that got that much media attention, although the atrocities committed in the CAR seem to be just as shocking as those reported in other parts of Africa. I mean, listen to this woman. She's called Odile. She set up an organization which is helping HIV-positive rape survivors and those living with AIDS. And she spoke about her fervent wish to see justice done to these perpetrators of what she says are crimes that have just gone absolutely unpunished. She wants the International Criminal Court to crack down on them.
We are stigmatized by everyone. Even at the market, people point at you and say, look at her, she's HIV positive, she was raped. We're not free. We can't just go out and about normally. Even the children don't respect us, their mother. We've lost our homes. We've become people who are alone and abandoned. The issue of justice is more important than other aspects of the program.
Let me ask you, as we bring this to a close for this week, Ophelia, just briefly, do you have the sense that people there have credibility, that the court has credibility with the people?
I don't know whether the average person in the Central African Republic or in Darfur or in the Democratic Republic of Congo or in Uganda, and these countries are all being investigated, some people for war crimes. I'm not sure whether the average citizen has any idea what the International Criminal Court is about. But if they feel that the injustices done to them over the wars by government soldiers, by rival militias, by rebels, by all sorts of marauding nodding. Folk, if they feel that they might get some justice at the end of the day, then I think they'll say ICC, International Criminal Court, whoever you are, wherever you are, in The Hague, in the Netherlands, then God bless you, because if that means justice for us and something to stop these people acting like this against normal, ordinary women and citizens in the future, then that's got to be a good thing.
Oh, Fabia, thank you. You've been very busy this week.
Always a busy week in Africa, and I hope in the future we'll have some more positive stories to share with News and Notes listeners. Ciao.
The documentary God Grew Tired of Us follows three Sudanese lost boys who fled their homeland during a civil war. They survived for years in refugee camps and were ultimately relocated to the United States. Adjusting to life in modern America wasn't easy, and at times a little strange. Here's a clip from the film.
No, there you will push, here you turn.
But this room is for...
No, there are two beds.
Again,
you have your own bed.
Your own bed.
Good.
Okay.
You don't share the bed. You share the room with your friend. Okay. You don't share the bed.
All right.
Okay? Okay, this is one of the most important things. It's alarm o'clock, a radio alarm o'clock.
Okay.
Okay? Mm-hmm. We'll set it up tomorrow.
Okay, okay.
Because as I say, in America, time is money.
Yes. Okay.
That again was a clip from the documentary God Grew Tired of Us.